When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to Undrafted, a Dynasty Game Theory podcast brought to you by the Undroppables. I am your host, Scott Belanger, a.k.a. Jax Falcone. You can find me on Twitter at Dino Game Theory. This is episode number 179. Let's roll. And folks, you guys know my process. Just a little window in, I'm more of an analytics person. Mainly because at the end of the day, I knew I didn't have enough time to watch as much film as I would want to. I'd love to be a film guy, sure, but that's a hard job. If you're going to do it right, you have to spend a lot of time. So we've leaned into analytics, and at the end of the day, that's hard too. Because if you're going to put something out there, you got to make sure it has some teeth. I've done the anatomy series over the years. That's been a fun looking, but I've never presented that as predictive. This past year, I was able to team up. Chalk and I have been building this as we go. We've been able to team up with Coder and Wiz, and we put together a model. We're really proud of that model. Of course, it's going to be available post-draft for you guys. But we've always wanted to lean into film work, and the film that we really rely on is mostly for wide receivers because, nobody knows what the hell's going on with quarterbacks. Running backs are really easy, quite frankly. Tight ends, who cares? But wide receivers is where we make our money. Look, if you drafted Jalen Reagor over Justin Jefferson or N'Keal Harry over A.J. Brown, you lost. So, and vice versa, you won if you flipped it. So these decisions are very, very big decisions in your rookie drafts. And the one way that Chalk and I have always implemented film for the wide receiver position has been with my guest today. I am super excited to bring on Matt Harmon, who does reception perception. I can't imagine that if you're listening to this show or watching me, you've never heard of him, but God bless you. If you haven't, you're in for a treat. Matt Harmon joins me today. I'm so grateful for that. You can find Matt on Twitter at @MattHarmon_BYB. Matt Harmon, thank you for being here.
Hey, buddy, I appreciate you for having me. I know we've been trying to make this happen for a minute. Hopping on this show, I'm glad we were finally able to do it. And I mean, what a great time. We are just over a week away from the NFL draft, which I don't know how you feel about this. This time of year, we were talking beforehand, I'm going on a lot of different shows. I'm doing a lot of work, on my side of it, on my show, on my site, at Yahoo as well. And sometimes it's like, man, I wish that there was this much fervor and interest in the post-draft period, because honestly, that is, to me, I think is really where the analysis is made a lot of times, because even just with some of those examples that you gave there, right? I don't think Jalen Reagor would have worked out on a different team. I don't think N'Keal Harry would have worked out on a different team. But there are certainly guys from the last couple of classes where I think, if they had just landed in a different spot, their career could have been totally different from just a deployment standpoint. As a big alignment dork at the receiver position, that is typically how I end up thinking about things. So, I'm just so excited to see where these guys land and everything. And like I said, just about a week here.
Well, I will tell you, if you have the time, you are welcome back post-draft. I mean, it's a long time between September 1 when, the sort of the games start. If you've got a week, we'd love to have you back. As you know, this show is long form. We get to talk it out here. So I know you're on a little bit of a time crunch. Well, for my people, you are. But we're going to get as much in as we possibly can. Before I do that, though, I got to mention, I got, mailbag question from Chalk. Basically, I wanted to say thank you for doing our series with Tommy Moe and Chalk breaking bread at the Undroppables. I don't even remember when that was, a couple of years ago or something like that. And that was super cool. We've done Liz Loza, Marcus Grant, other great, you know, fantasy minds. It's really a cool series. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that series and thank you. And then also Chalk's question is, what was it like to be waited on by a robot?
Well, to answer the question first, it was pretty electric. Never had that happen to me in my entire life. I had never been. It's funny. My wife is a huge Din Tai Fung fan, and she was like, "Oh my gosh, you're going there? That's great!" Because we had actually never been there together. So it was my first time going. I after that had been multiple times with my wife. Actually, you mentioned like when this was. I don't even know if I think I was married by then. I actually might have been a little bit before I got married. Right. So hard to say. It's been a minute since I went there with Chalk and Tommy, which was a great time. But yeah, anyways, you know, the robots is coming around the corner. I'm like, oh, didn't expect to see that. Like that I wasn't ready for.
Right.
So yeah, it was awesome. Great experience. And I love I just love the series that you guys put together there. You know, obviously it's kind of after my own heart, like specifically with the Backyard Banter podcast that I used to do, where we're you're interviewing people in the industry, which, number one, I just like to hear people tell good stories. That's my just favorite part of being in this industry and just kind of like getting to know people in general, because everybody has such a unique little path to how they got into this. So, that part of it was cool. And like I said, it was a great meal with a couple of great guys. So, I appreciated it.
Thank you. And by the way, it was an inspirational piece, because Tommy, who was pretty big at that point, has gone on an amazing journey. And
yeah,
dude,
he's a beast.
He looks great. I don't know if you've seen him recently, but he is slim and trim and strong. Like I used to always, for those Pulp Fiction fans, you know, Tommy's been a friend of mine for a long time, and he's a big dude. I've met him a few times, you know, and he's just big. And I would always be like, what's the brother going to do? He's Samoan, you know? So of course we'd have that little joke, but you know, at the end of the day, he's worked really hard on his body, and he looks outstanding, man. He's like, unbelievable. So you inspired that as well a little bit.
Nah, yeah, he looks incredible. We've messaged about it back and forth a little bit since then. So I'm super proud of him. And like, I mean, anybody that wants to go on that journey, like, I'm always down to talk. I'm down to, you know, share ideas and stuff. Because, like, I talk about this too. My journey is kind of still ongoing with health and fitness. Like, I'm in a very different place now than I was certainly when I wrote the article that's on my pinned tweet from Backyard Banter, the website. So, it's a process. It's like an ongoing thing. And, you know, anybody that wants to talk wide receivers, obviously always down to talk about wide receivers. Yeah. Anyone wants to talk about route running, always down. But like, yeah, health and fitness and like how to kind of cater that around your lifestyle is certainly another passion of mine.
Yeah, for sure. And it's funny because I was about to send the show sheet and I'm like, kind of a surprise twist, we're gonna talk wide receivers. And it's your thing. I mean, you've put in a lot of work, and that's the other thing that, you know, I want to get to here. I don't want to talk a lot of time about it, because it's like, you know, I want to get to the players. We have only limited time. Sure. But the one thing that I think is a couple quick things. Number one, you do the work. Okay. This is a real big job, a big undertaking. You do it for the NFL. You do it for the college, prospects. You basically chart every route, every rep, and try to put it into numbers. Not just like, ah, man, I watched the film. That guy's pretty good. It's literally a charted, process. And for that, you then have data that comes from it. And that is what you sort of put against one another. So you're not like, it's not your opinion, so to speak. I mean, granted, there's some subjectivity to it all, but for the most part, you try to take as much of that out with your process. That's why we value it, because we want to be able to rely upon it year over year. And of course, that's the same thing for you, because I've heard you talk about how now historically you can go back and with that same process repeated over and over again. Of course, this must come from your friend Matt Waldman, but you know, then you can actually have something that's reliable. And then you can speak to that. But then secondly, the big thing for me is the two things that you do that I find great value in. I've been preaching on this podcast for a long period of time that wide receivers, there's more than one position. It's like way more than one utilization of a wide receiver. Speed, threat, you know, there's the MVS types that just, you know, even Gabe Davis, you know, just take the top off. He's not really a speed guy, but he doesn't really do much other than take. Then there's the little slot guys. There's guys who are, you know, queen chess pieces, the Justin Jeffersons, you can move everywhere, big slots, alpha X, right? You know, sort of decoy X. You can name a million different sort of prototypes of the wide receiver position. And I think you uncover that with your utilization. So you have success rate and utilization. I think this is huge and why I really, really value your opinion and wanted to have you on the show.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And yeah, I do take a lot of inspiration from Matt Waldman, you know, one of my earliest friends and like mentors in the industry, honestly, because, you know, he always says this a lot with the RSP, like he puts out 1,000 pages right. worth of a publication. And like, I mean, how many people are really reading 1,000 pages? I buy my RSP every single year and I do not read all 1,000 pages, Matt. God love you, buddy, but like no chance. But like he does all that to show his work. And really, right. like if you want to get down to it, that's what reception perception is. It's kind of showing the work. It's showing the rubric, right? Where yes. as I come on these shows and like I don't necessarily just sit here and read off a player profile, like read a bunch of numbers at you, because you know what? That's not compelling information. Like, but for people that want that, you can pay $30 and subscribe to the site and you can get every piece of data point for all these prospects that you want, right? Yeah. So it's just kind of like, again, it's just sort of showing the work. And yeah, a lot of work goes into it. The good thing is that I love the work, man. Like it's super. Yeah, go ahead.
No. How have you found, like, of course, look, you know, those who don't, like, there's a lot of haters out there. You do amazing work. I already know that. That's clear. We rely upon it. We get, you know, reception perception every year. We utilize it. It's something that we believe in. So, you know, whatever. But one thing that I think that you, like I said, this, the utilization of players, I think there's got to, and you do a great job of articulating this also. When I hear you talk, I love it because you're able to say, here's what he can do. You know, he ran a lot right. of digs and slants. So, you know, and he was successful. And you start to paint a picture of what a guy can do. And then, you know, it's not like NFL teams are oblivious to what you're doing. They're looking at the same thing. Maybe probably some of them not as well, quite frankly. People always say, oh, you think you can do better than the NFL? Yeah, in some fucking cases, of course. You know, not everybody, right? I mean, some cases, of course not. That's just how this works. You know, yeah, I might be better than some people. But that being said, they are looking at this stuff and they are trying to paint a picture of, hey, how can we use this guy? And it's kind of the reason why someone like a Henry Ruggs gets drafted ahead of a CeeDee Lamb. It's because mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. speed was tantalizing. They felt like they needed the speed to help their football team. I don't even think, I mean, maybe somewhere in their delusional minds, they really thought that Henry Ruggs could outperform, you know, CeeDee Lamb on a, you know, catches, receptions, targets type basis. But I would have to think you're a moron to think that that's the case. But maybe that's, I would hope to think that they knew what they were getting in a Henry Ruggs versus a CeeDee Lamb at that point. And they were buying a different, you know, they were buying a different machine.
Yeah, that's a great point because we judge everything, especially in fantasy, based off production.
Right.
And whereas NFL teams are trying to think of like fielding an offense and constructing an offense. And you can push back on whether that's smart or not.
Right.
But that's just the reality of it. And I think that's why a lot of things like that happen. But you brought up a great point here, which is just that, like, the number one thing I've learned really across the course of 10 years of doing reception perception and even like the year beforehand, starting to put it together and sort of testing it on the back end and things like that before ever putting any content out, the deployment of these players is where everything's like the conversation should always start. And it's so easy to just be like, well, this guy sucks and this guy's good. And like
right.
a lot of the times I think there are a good handful of consumers that just want that. Right. Like, I had a boss at NFL Network who, not a boss, but somebody who thought they were a boss, say like, yeah, I don't care about all this like stuff. I like, should I draft this guy or not? Do I start this guy or not? I'm like,
right.
okay, yeah. I mean, like, I get it that that's what probably the vast majority of fantasy consumers want.
Correct.
But I don't think that's an intelligent way to talk about the game. And
right.
I think anybody who's creating content, your number one, like, if you act like and you portray the fact that you think your users and readers and consumers are stupid, they're gonna treat you like that you treat them that way,
yes.
right? It's not a good relationship to foster with your audience. So I never think about it like there's too much detail to go into with players. Like I just flat disagree with that, right? And
right.
it just is what it is. But like specifically with receivers, you know, there are things I said like based off reception perception data in the beginning that I would definitely not say now. And like a good example of this is these sort of interposition archetypes, right? Now the example I always come back to is Antonio Brown and Juju Smith-Schuster with the 2018-2017 Pittsburgh Steelers, where it was like, to me, I was low on Juju at the time, and he was like high. He was a high yield player in Dynasty, high ranked player in Dynasty, and he obviously had that great 2018 season, which in 2018, I looked like an idiot for being low on Juju because he was super productive. Over the course of his career, I think I actually kind of nailed the player evaluation there, and just like who he was, who he ended up kind of topping out as.
Right.
But
for sure.
But at the time, it was, I'm watching these players, I'm looking at their reception perception data, and while like fantasy Twitter and, you know, even some smart NFL analysis folks, maybe smart in quotes, are like, is Juju Smith-Schuster better than Antonio Brown because of like this per route metric or per target metric? And to me, it was like, why are we even talking about these guys in the same sentence beyond the fact that they play for the same team, because they basically don't even play the same position.
Right.
Like, what you're asking AB to do versus what you're asking Juju Smith-Schuster to do, like, in my opinion, one is easier than the other, and one is just like, it's easier to produce in this role than it is in the other one. That doesn't have to be a negative for Juju, though, right? And again, be like, well, Juju actually sucks and he's overrated and all this stuff like that. No, it just is understanding that a wide receiver is not the same as this other guy that just has WR next to his name. And I think especially when we talk about draft prospects, that's super important. It's super important for several players in this class. So that to me has actually weirdly been the most enjoyable like discovery about the position over the course of 10 years of doing this, man. And you know, there are a lot of things I've, like I said, come to this realization of with the position or just enjoyed studying the position on that, like, I had no idea I was going to get into. I was talking with Kevin Clark of ESPN the other day on his show, and afterwards he's like, yeah, you know, really smart to get into the receiver kind of business, like, you know. And I told him, I was like, I wish I had the foresight to that, like, this was going to be like a receiver business was going to be booming 10 years after when I started it. Number one, had no idea about that, and really, like, I had no idea about all the things I was going to learn about the position when I started out, with this alignment stuff being kind of chief among that list.
Yeah, I love that. We have a model that basically has pushed a lot of those outside X guys down, and it works really well in doing that. If we have, you know, some contested catch stuff in there, you know, so in other words, how often, how many of your targets are contested target percentage basically is one of the inputs in the model, because as you point out, if you're having a lot of contested catches in college, that means you're probably not separating. So, I mean, you see that in the film. We see
sometimes,
that.
Sometimes.
Right.
Probably like you're looking for that 10% of guys where that's not the case. But bingo. I mean, then that's where the film comes in. But yeah, for the most part, it's true.
By the way, that's where I'm going. So like, we see that as a negative, right? You see that on film. We see that in the data. And then we get to a guy like Marvin Harrison Jr. I'm not saying he doesn't separate. I'm just saying he plays at outside X, and he shows up as one of the five best prospects in the model ever. So he's playing a position that basically, you know, the model sort of doesn't like, and he's still that great, which brings me to Marvin Harrison. You know, he's my wide receiver one. I've flirted with Malik Nabers. The model loves Malik Nabers too, but I have a hard time. I've gone back. I've looked at the data. I've watched some film again. It's really hard for me because I also understand that the game has changed. You can speak to this a little bit if you want, but look, how long have you been doing this? What was the first year you did reception?
First year on NFL players, the first year I collected league-wide data was 2014. Not league-wide, not like every single player.
That's okay, but that's fine. You started it. Yes.
Yeah.
So if you think about it, the 10 years ago, we were looking for different types of wide receivers than we are today.
No question.
I mean, it's just a fact. You know, 1,000%. I was in on Tank Dell. 1,000% in 2014. I'd have told you you're a lunatic for wanting to, you know. But I was in on Tank Dell. I was like, dude, I think he's going to be awesome. And I would never have said that in 2014 or who knows, maybe 2022. I don't know. But at some point, you know. And now, sure enough, I'm in, and I think there's something to be said for that, because the passing game is quicker in the NFL, lower A dot, more attempts, right? So, I mean, it's just a different passing game, less contact. So speed and quickness is more valuable than strength and you know, and that sort of thing. What are your thoughts about that? And then maybe bleed into Marvin Harrison.
Yeah, I think that's so critical when we talk about receivers, and it sounds crazy to say when you bring up some of the names like I'm going to say here, but for guys that play in the league now, there's just so many more options. Like the position is so much more open to different archetypes of receivers. There are guys that have their career possibilities opened up now that like they might not have been able to hack it in the league 10, right. you know, 10 years ago, certainly like 15, something like that. Like I even think about a guy like Cooper Kupp.
Right.
And that's, this sounds berserk to say, because it was not just a couple years ago that the guy led the NFL in catches, yards and touchdowns. But you think about when he came into the league with the Rams early on in his career, this is a guy that was playing off the ball. He was playing big slot receiver. He was playing almost like a tight end at times. Like there were in those early McVay offenses, and he still does some of this now, but especially early on there with the Rams, you literally would see him like chip a like an incoming rusher and right. then like go out into the flat and just be, you know, wide ass open against zone coverage. And you said it back then, it was this a role that really you couldn't compare to every NFL receiver. Now there's a lot more of these like big slot types in yep. the NFL. I think Cooper Kupp has sort of been almost like the godfather of that yep. archetype receiver. But even back in 2017, say he doesn't get drafted by the Rams, he gets drafted by some like dumbass coaching staff that right. says, oh yeah, he's over 6 foot, he's over 200 pounds, like we're gonna throw this guy out at X receiver. I don't think he has the skill set to do that, especially not early on in his career. Maybe now he can do a little more X stuff just because he's further developed. I actually think he is fast. Well, maybe not now, but
right
I certainly
now, right.
would have said
when,
this
at
after,
his peak, he
right,
was.
Right now. Yes. But yeah, 21, he was probably better and faster and more explosive than he was when he was a young player
for sure.
coming into the league. Yep. So, but that just kind of goes to show like the conversation that even beyond just the smaller players, like these archetypes are so much more open now to guys that maybe wouldn't have hacked it in the league. And it's important when we're talking about prospects of like the risk reward of these guys and like, do they need to just be in the right place, the right deployment? Like, hey, Treylon Burks is a guy that I said probably should have played as a big slot receiver.
For sure.
And, you know, people now want to say like, oh yeah, you called it, pat yourself on the back for being lower than consensus on Treylon Burks. Well, you could easily read my reception perception profile and see like, yeah, big slot receiver, kind of could play in a juju role. And had he gone to a team that like used him that way, he could be putting up 1,200, 1,300, 1,400 yards. I mean, maybe. I don't know.
I know
but,
what
like,
you mean.
That is possible.
He's
and
also had some
like
injury.
Idiot.
He's had some injury luck,
yeah.
too. I mean, really, it's been
totally.
Really fucked up, man. He, his rookie year, I think he had the toe and then a brutal concussion. He got rocked in the end zone and was basically done. And then when he came back, he was like, all right, I feel good. And they were like, all right, Malik Willis is your quarterback. Head out there and do it, bro.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's a lot of negativity there for him. And then he made a pretty badass catch. I think he was out of bounds on his concussion this past year and just snapped his head on the ground like a coconut. That was really bad, too. So he's had two pretty terrible concussions. Not excuse making. It's just the way it's worked out. I don't think he's been all that great either. And I don't think the situation's been great. But that's the whole point of what I do, in this space is I'm a range of outcomes guy. There's no like – just like your old boss was like, should I draft him or not? It's like, fuck if I know, bro. Like, I'm going to tell you what the answers to all these questions are. I can tell you that. I can't tell you if you should draft him. I don't, what's the ADP? What's the thing? That's the other thing, too. It's like, hail to the king. I don't hate players. I hate ADPs. I'll talk about, some players going forward, A.D. Mitchell, Keon Coleman, that I don't like so much. But if you tell me I can draft him in the early third of a rookie draft, I love him.
Right.
But at late first, I'm very dubious. So all that comes into play. Marvin Harrison, tell me, I think the question I had written down is how elite is this profile for you historically? You've done this since 2014. When you see this, what are your thoughts here?
I think he's the best prospect I've charted. Again, I haven't done all of the draft classes. I've mostly done like 2016, 2017, 2018, then I had a two-year gap in charting prospects for the public, and then I've done all the last four draft classes. In that span, he is the best prospect that I have charted, and he's almost sort of funny that we're talking about, well, these new positional archetypes and blah, blah, blah. He is like your classic carved from stone number one receiver
yes.
that's been a number one receiver for like 20 years.
True
right?
that.
Like he is that guy. He's a true X receiver in his reception perception sample. He's outside for 78.9% of his sample snaps.
Yep.
He's on the line for 78.9% of his sample snaps. He's just a true X. Faces press coverage at a decent amount for a college receiver, and he has a 78.7% success rate versus press, which is a really, really good marker. I mean, he is, again, carved from stone, number one receiver, a guy that you can throw out there at X, I think, tomorrow.
Yes.
I think like two years ago and go
yes,
to work.
Exactly.
I don't also like there's some little nitpicks in his game, certainly, but he doesn't have like a I see where this is like he fails because of this type of thing. I also feel that way about Rome Odunze, but especially with Marvin Harrison, just I'm such a fan of him as a prospect. I think he's like crazy polished for a young receiver. And I think because he hasn't tested athletically, Scott, like we haven't got a combine on him, we haven't got a pro day, people are kind of like discounting his athleticism, but like watch him play, man. I think he shows plenty of freaky moments, like yeah. ways that he gets in and out of the breaks at that size, the way he could take the top off. Like I think this is a high tier athlete and a high tier technician as well, which to me is just the perfect combination.
I'll tell you some things that are not in the model. One is size. The other one is athleticism. Not in there. Don't care. You know, at the wide receiver position, you know, speed actually is probably the worst thing that you can put in a model because it's going to skew it.
Yeah.
It's going to hurt the model. I mean, it really is. I mean, and that's not to say like that I don't want a guy to be fast. It's just to say that, you know, you can't count it twice. If the guy is breaking tackles and going downfield and making big plays, maybe fast. And if he's not, still pretty cool. He's able to do it, you know? So, yeah, the speed doesn't necessarily come in. I mean, there's a certain threshold, you know, you see a guy that's out there that can't, you know, can't separate, can't get downfield. Well, look, now we understand where his limitations are, and you talked about it, and we'll get there in a moment with big slot transitions and how Keon Coleman should probably do that. But before I get to him, Malik Nabers is a guy that, dude, I turn on the film as a film guy, you got to be like, holy shit, this is like the most fun. Like I had so much fun. I was like, this is sick. Like I was saying, you'll like this. It's like when you play the video game, you know, Madden, there's like, you know, the angle that you should take, you know, to like destroy the angle of the defender. Like, and you're like, oh, I got this and they can't catch me. I feel like Nabers does that like every time. You're like, oh, he's just fucking perfect. You know, you're like, that is so sick. So he's so good after the catch. He's so electric. He's so, you know, what, he jumped 42 inches or something like that, ran a 4.4. Like, this kid is all there. Perfect prototype size, 6 foot, 200, basically almost exactly like Jamar Chase and Justin Jefferson. He's built out of the lab for today's game. But my question to you is, those are all obvious. If I were to tell you, I've got a crystal ball, and if I were to tell you that he didn't end up living up to expectations, what weakness in his game that you see today would you think would be the reason? You'd be like, ah, I bet you it's this.
Yeah, I would say that if he doesn't live up to expectations, because I agree with all the positives there, he's the easiest player to fall in love with in the draft class, is what I've been saying. He's like, you know, he's the king of broken ankles and broken angles. So like, he's just a treat, right? Which to me, I think actually gives him a pretty good floor.
Right.
So that, like, unless there's, you know, off-field personality stuff that we don't know about or like develops in the league, like I have a hard time seeing him like flame out, right? But if we're talking about a guy that gets drafted in the top 10 and like his team at the end of his rookie contract is like, all right, we'll pick up the fifth year option, but we're not like rushing to give this guy an extension or something like
that. Like a Jerry Judy career where you're like, man, never really did it. Like, what happened?
You know, it's so funny that you say Jerry Judy, because I was going to say that I think he could end up, if he does not work out, it will be because he falls too hard into kind of like the wild horse route runner archetype of receivers. Because I do think he's in that bucket. To me, when we compare these top three receivers, he is easily, without a doubt, the least refined, in my opinion.
Right, of course.
Of these
yes.
three guys. He's also the youngest and whatever, but like, you just look at his success rates versus press coverage, good, 72.1%, but it is lower than the other two top guys. His success rate versus zone is lower than the other two top guys, but I wouldn't say he's bad or he's in like a negative tier there. He's just the least refined of these three, but he's still in a pretty decent like way down the path. So honestly, I would say that's probably the reason why like he never tightens up those fundamentals. Kind of Jerry Judy is the one version of that, like as a guy that I think was overrated as a route runner, because he's like, he's a wild horse. He's frenetic. And you see all these little jukes and motions and all this stuff. It's like, okay, cool. Well, guess what? The quarterback is sacked by the time like you're supposed to be open.
Right.
So that is not real route running. That is like quick feet and agility. It's not route running. Two different things to me. And that has been why Jerry Judy has been a mercurial NFL player, at least part of the picture.
Right.
The other like end of that archetype, though, the positive end of it is Garrett Wilson, who I think was a better prospect than Malik Nabers coming out, but like a more refined version, but still in that draft class, in my opinion, he was the least refined of the three top guys in Chris Olave and Drake London and then himself. But then you look by the end of his rookie year, they did a lot to like play him out of the slot early on. And then by the end of the season, he's playing outside. He's mostly an X receiver for the Jets in his rookie season. And you look at his success rate versus press coverage at the end of his rookie season, he's over 80% success rate versus press. And like pretty much everybody that's done that in reception perception history as a rookie hit over 80% is a good player. It's like Jamar Chase, it's Odell Beckham, it's Justin Jefferson, it's Michael Thomas, it's Tyreek Hill. You know, it's just like it's CeeDee Lamb. It's just a list of all good players, and then Garrett Wilson. So there, that's sort of, if we want to talk range of outcomes, like I think if he gets to be like that Jerry Jeudy type, it's because he never truly tightened up the fundamentals. But I probably personally think he's more Garrett Wilson than Jerry Jeudy.
Yeah, for sure. Well, just to give you a little eye into our model, I'll share a bit with you just because I think this is kind of interesting. Malik Nabers and Marvin Harrison tie in the model, and they're only since 2018, and really even some of the 2018 data is not quite good because there's not a lot of contested target percentage in what we could pull. So we couldn't go too far back with the exact model because we don't have the data to make it the same, right? But in any event, since 2018, they are third and fourth tied behind only Jefferson, Lamb, and Chase. And behind them is like, you know, JSN, Olave, Jeudy, Addison, you know, Garrett Wilson's right there, you know, Drake London, right? So it's like he does score above them, and he's closer to this Jefferson, Lamb, Chase tier with Marvin Harrison than some of these others. So he's a really, really awesome prospect by how we at least have tried to figure out analytically what it looks like. And to watch him was amazing. And then to see your feedback and the NFL's feedback, I think he's basically a can't miss. But it is interesting. I do feel like he's a little bit more of a wild card because it's a little bit more from athleticism and freakishness than it is from refinement. Speaking of refinement, Mr. Romadunze, was he the first guy to basically create a Christmas tree out of your charting?
In terms of prospects, yes, he is the first prospect, which I go, I'm sure this is like the right podcast to talk about this.
Yeah.
I go back, I have a love-hate relationship with my own route charts because like sometimes I think people are too color obsessed.
Yes.
And like the real information is in the profile. And like, I promise you that that's going to give you a better look on the player than just like green good, red bad.
Yeah.
But look, it's still by and large a good thing if you are an elite separator, which in my opinion is what Romadunze is. He is the first prospect I've charted for any draft class that's been above the prospect average on every single route in terms of his ability to get open. I think that's a great kind of like just stamp of approval for who Romadunze is, because he is in that like 10% bucket that we talked about earlier where he has a lot of contested targets. But
yes.
Not because he's not getting open, man. Like, watch this guy play. Like, watch the Michigan film. Watch, like, these big-time games he plays in. Like, he is a guy that gets open and, you know, sometimes gets thrown into contested situations. It's the same thing with Drake London, right? Like, that was very similar there. A lot of contested targets, a lot of contested catches. Is it because he can't separate?
Mm-hmm.
No, I mean, he's a big guy, and he's trusted in those situations, and he plays with an erratic quarterback, you know, kind of from a downfield passing perspective, even though Michael Penix is certainly better than whatever USC was rolling out that year with Drake London. But yeah, I think overall, like, Romadunze, super clean prospect, can do everything extremely well. Like, if we were to sit down and do a superlatives exercise, I could throw him as the best in the class for a variety of different things. I struggled really hard in terms of who do I like better, Romadunze or Marvin Harrison. I ultimately ended up going with Harrison by a just kind of a hair there in this draft class. But Romadunze is my wide receiver too. Just, and like, he and Harrison are more samey than Malik Nabers is, because Nabers is, you know, he plays so much out of the slot. Some of that production out of the slot in college football is definitely a little BS. Whereas like, you have just two classic like X receiver types that, you know, depending on where they land, some teams can get the best out of that archetype, some cannot. Like, I think that's a great thing for your model to sort of like adjust for that. But overall, just such a clean player, so well rounded. I think he's another very high floor player with a high ceiling as well.
Yeah, to speak to your contested catch, you know, according to PFF, excuse me, he had 28 contested targets. He caught 21, which is ridiculous to have a 75% catch rate on a screen pass. Like, you know, these running backs,
yeah,
some of them have,
crazy,
you know, 75% catch rate. You're like, yeah, pretty good running back. And every pass is a fucking dump off. You know, this guy's catching 75% of his contested unbelievable, because that's what the film shows too. Because I do minimal film work. You know, I rely on you for the rest of it. You do the heavy lifting. That's what we pay you for. But exactly. But when I watch, it's like, dude, Penix is, first of all, Penix throwing dimes was probably a lot of what you saw when you watched that film. Penix, like, I don't know much. Like, Danny Kelly was on the pod and he said the best thing. He goes, Penix just has answers, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's so true. He doesn't take sacks and he doesn't have low completion percentage. He's not throwing the ball away. He's throwing it into sometimes tight coverage. And of course, Rome is making the catch, but it's not like, you know, bailing him out. It's like, holy shit, that's a great throw. Wow, that's a great catch. Like, there's a lot of those types of plays for Rome Odunze on his tape. Just an incredible player. So I cannot push back. He is clearly my wide receiver 3. I'm with you. My wide receiver 4 right now is definitely one of the more divisive prospects. So Troy Franklin goes to the combine and like runs a little bit of a squiggly line on the gauntlet, and now he sucks. Is that basically what I'm being told?
The gauntlet, not great for him. The whole combine was weird for him, honestly, yeah. Because, you know, he's like super light, but kind of runs a slower 40. You're kind of raising your eyebrows at that. Honestly, it reminded me a little bit of Jalin Hyatt, just the combine perspective. You know, because and I know that's not what you want to hear if you're a Troy Franklin guy, but I'll dive into it a little more. Where like lighter than you kind of thought, but slower than you thought in the 40, like very similar. But at the same time, Troy Franklin is much better than Jalin Hyatt, in my opinion. And he played a much different role. Like, the crazy thing about Troy Franklin is that you see him line up outside on the line of scrimmage for the vast majority of his snaps. Like, he was the Oregon Ducks' ex receiver. Whereas Jalin Hyatt was playing in that like Mickey Mouse, Looney Tunes offense as the slot receiver and at Tennessee. So that's kind of where the comparison ends. And plus, like, Troy Franklin, I actually think is a great route runner. I think he's got really good route running chops. Jalin Hyatt absolutely did not have that at Tennessee. So again, that's sort of where the comparison ends there, is what actually matters, which is on the field. But my issues with Troy Franklin, who I have as a top 10 receiver prospect in this class, I have more of like a priority round 2 ranking on him as opposed to like a round 1. I'm not quite there in terms of like top 5 receiver in the class, but I do like him. My worries are just that, like, when we talk about smaller players and you talk about like Tank Dell, you know, these type of guys, the problem is that like Tank Dell showed he could beat press coverage at the collegiate level. 80 percentile success rate versus press coverage and reception.
I think he could beat double press coverage somehow. Like,
yeah, he's a stud. Like, he showed he could play above that size and that the size was not a limiting factor in his game. I think guys like Troy Franklin and even Xavier Worthy in this class, like, those questions pop up in their reception perception results in terms of his ability to be pressed, like contacts and routes. His slant route success rate is low. His dig route success rate is low. I don't think he fully trusts his hands either. That
he did
shows
have some hands issues
as well.
Yeah,
he absolutely. And even in that gauntlet, like, there are kinds where he was, you know, slowing down to catch it, you know, like couple drops, stuff like that. I'm not worried about. I just think that he's a player necessarily. I'm not necessarily worried about it. It is a concern, but I think you can coach out drops and stuff like that.
So let me do this.
Yeah,
so,
go ahead.
So I've asked before we had our model, right? Because I think this is fair. Like, from my eyes, from as I just look at prospects, the way I look at them, you know, without, you know, having the analytics or the film in depth, I would say, okay, here we have Troy Franklin. And I would say, I asked the question, this is amazing that you brought up Jalin Hyatt, because I asked the question to a bunch of college guys, you know, early in the process, John Lobb and Ray Garvin, Felix Sharp, et cetera, right? Thor Nystrom, right? I said, is Troy Franklin more Jalin Hyatt or more Jordan Addison? And I'm just going to tell you that, you know, I wasn't sure. I thought he was certainly more Jordan Addison than he was Jalin Hyatt. But then our model comes out, and when we see Jalin Hyatt, he's the 109th prospect, you know, in the database, you know, out of whatever 180, and he's around. Let me give you some names here: Gary Jennings, Gabe Davis, Kyle Phillips, Riley Ridley, Parker Washington, John Hightower, A.T. Perry. You know what I mean? Like, that's where he, you know, that's sort of the scores that are near him. Those aren't comps. Yeah. That's just the company he finds himself in. And then when we look at Troy Franklin, it's Chris Olave, Jerry Jeudy, Jordan Addison, Devontae Smith. Like, those are the players that are around him. just what this model spits at us. Now, someone could say, well, gimmicky offense, this, that, and the other. Well, Jalin Hyatt had a gimmicky offense, and his shit was way down there. You know what I mean? You know, so ultimately, the model really loves Troy Franklin. And for me, that's enough to split the difference when I start to think, hey, this guy could be good. And when you're talking about, you know, Xavier Worthy's okay in the model, not to say that that's everything, but, you know, he's okay. And then the other guys are all like, okay, you're talking Brian Thomas, A.D. Mitchell, Keon Coleman. I mean, these are all very unsure X receivers that I don't really like that prototype for fantasy. Again, A.D. Mitchell could get drafted and play a Gabe Davis role. Is he better than Gabe Davis? Probably, you know, of course, but how much does that mean in terms of target, target share at the NFL level? I'm not sure. So,
hey, think about not even just because Gabe Davis, like, you know, people don't like Gabe Davis, but like people, I don't know where you stand on George Pickens, but like think about George Pickens as a guy that some people love and they're sitting there clamoring like, why doesn't George Pickens get more targets? Like he should get an alpha level target share. He's getting an alpha level target share. Well, number one, he plays as that X receiver, like you said, which you got to have the right quarterback and the right offense to funnel 30% of your offense to
or DeAndre Hopkins, AJ Green, Marvin Harrison Jr.
You have to be an elite level player.
Bingo.
If you think George Pickens is an elite level player, you're crazy. So he's kind of towards the top of that, like, X receiver bucket,
yes,
right?
He's
in terms of the
non-elite. He's not elite, but he's toward the top. I'm with you 1,000%. Keep going.
Like a Mike Williams type of player, right? I think he's kind of similar to that type of guy in terms of where he is right now in his career.
Yep.
So, and people like, well, why he's only running vertical routes? Like he's got to, but those are the routes he's good at. You want him running those routes. Like if you want to get the best out of George Pickens in this vertical X receiver archetype, you want to know what you want him to do? You wanted to fucking run vertical routes, yes, man. Like, so the reality is that you can't just put him in this different bucket, like, because he's this archetype of receiver.
Would you say George Pickens is in the same bucket as T. Higgins?
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
I think same bucket.
They're
of
both
players.
Great players.
I think T is better. I think T is a better route runner in the underneath area. But again, yeah, and the Bengals offense is weird because they have two, like, top-level guys that could play X receiver, and so they have to kind of move these guys around. But I do think it's the same archetype, the same kind of, like, family of receivers. So for that reason, like, it's just – but
I think if they just traded George Pickens and T. Higgins, I don't think there'd be that much difference, you know.
No.
Right?
No, I don't think so. I think it'd be a slight drop-off for Cincinnati and, like, a slight improvement for Pittsburgh, but not, like, a huge, huge deal, right? And the thing is, though, that type is always going to be volatile. Like, so for a fantasy manager, if you can't handle that volatility, if you can't handle the 2 for 54 weeks or the 3 for 48 weeks, you don't want this type of receiver unless they're in a perfect offense or they're an elite player, which if they're neither, and like George Pickens has certainly been neither at this point, he's not been in a good offense and he's not an elite player.
Right.
That's going to be super volatile. So yeah, I totally hear your point about this, like, archetype of receivers. And I do think Troy Franklin, he's kind of a tough evaluation because he played that X receiver position Oregon, but I don't think he's going to do that in the NFL. And to your point about Jordan Addison, actually, when you look at the another guy, USC plays an X receiver role, but, you know, he was better at Pittsburgh or with the Pittsburgh Panthers as an off ball player in the slot. If you actually just look at their metrics side by side in reception perception, which I had not considered this comparison before coming on the show, so I'm glad we were talking about this.
You're welcome.
Jordan Addison last year, 71.3% success rate versus man, 80% success rate versus zone, 51.1% success rate versus press. I remember leaving his evaluation being like, I'm a little concerned about him as an outside receiver. I'm concerned about him being a number one receiver. I don't think with that success rate versus press, he can do that. Troy Franklin, in this year's class, 70.3% success rate versus man, 82.4% success rate versus zone, and 58% success rate versus press. Those scores are pretty close. They're pretty in shouting distance. Like, Addison's better versus man, but Franklin's a little bit better versus press and a little bit better versus zone. And they're kind of playing that same role. So I say all that to say that I remember, like, all my concerns about Jordan Addison went out the window from a fantasy perspective the moment he got drafted by Minnesota. Because, okay, Well, he never go play X receiver or be the number one guy with Justin Jefferson there. So he can be very productive in this role. And the Vikings even talked about that. So that says that if Troy Franklin, who I don't think is going to go, I don't think Trent Franklin's going to go in round one. I think he's going to be a round two player. But if he goes to a spot where they have that established X as a number one guy, shoot, even if it's a team like Pittsburgh, when we're talking about George Pickens is not an elite player like Justin Jefferson is, but he's an X, I think I'll be much higher post-draft on Troy Franklin than I am right now.
I was higher on Jordan Addison than I am on Troy Franklin. You know, the model actually kind of likes him, but you know, every time we look at a model or any sort of thing like that, it's really just a matter of context anyway. It's not like, well, the model says, so that's what we do. But what I'm getting at is just for me, you know, it just gave me a little bit more confidence in Troy Franklin. And I think the comp to Jordan Addison is fair. I just do.
I like it.
Yeah, I think it's a fair comp. Let me see here.
Franklin's a little bit taller too. So like in an ideal world, if he has the work ethic to do this, like I think he could actually put on some weight, maybe more than Addison is. And it is funny. Like Sometimes I just watch Troy Franklin and I think like if you were just 10 pounds bigger, bro, like your game, you would be like a clear first round grade for me just because I think he wouldn't get knocked around in route so much. I think just all of his issues come down to frame a little bit because He just like Addison has the route running chops and has the technique. It just isn't always effective because of who he is as a player. So I do think that he's a volatile guy too because the hands and stuff like that. I think he could be he could end up being in that bucket, like the dreaded better for real life than fantasy bucket.
Potentially.
But, I see the positives in his profile.
Yep. Yeah. So I, you know, when you look at also his ADOT was over 12 every year, that is Troy Franklin in an offense that the ADOT was not very like, what was Bo Nix? ADOT was like six.
Oh, Bo Nix getting it out fast, buddy. Yeah. Like Franklin, you want to see like Bo Nix push it down the field. Like just don't queue up the Bo Nix cut up. Queue right. up the Troy Franklin
That's
cut
it.
Up.
That's my
those
point.
Those are going to be the reps.
Those are the reps. And it, on those reps in a team that didn't throw the ball down the field, he was very efficient. He was very efficient there. And, you know, so I don't know. You know, it's pretty interesting. I do prefer Addison. And, you know, Wiz and I just did a startup together and we had this long debate on Addison. We hashed it out on the pod a couple weeks ago too, which was fun. But, you know, he has some concerns about Addison going forward. None of these players are like, you know, like you say, it's not binary, good, so bad. That's it. It's like they find themselves somewhere in between. And, you know, things are always a bit fragile. Speaking of fragile, let's go to Xavier Worthy real quick. I have a question. You're going to love this question. This is a fun question. If you were on the clock at like whatever, you know, random team, don't pick your team because then you'll fit it for it. But like, you know, the right around, you know, pick 32. We'll just say right around pick 32. And you are the NFL guy. You're just, this is not what you think will happen. This is you. Xavier Worthy or Jermaine Burton, who would you pick?
I'm picking Xavier Worthy.
Okay. I just heard you like Jermaine Burton, so I wasn't sure how much you would
want. Because Jermaine Burton has big character issues.
That's what I've heard.
If it was just on the field perspective, Burton's a better prospect. Like Burton's film is better.
There we go.
To be honest with you, man, Burton like has first round player film. He has first round player reception results. Like if the profile will be up by the time people listen to this, because it should be up this evening.
Nice.
It's up there with like I think he would be my wide receiver four, and like I'm kind of conflicted on how I end up ranking this just because from an on-field perspective he definitely has that sort of those chops, but I just know I've talked to enough people that there are issues off the field, and you can look some of this stuff up on your own, but it's tough, but I go back and forth on that, but like If these guys were the same person, same personality types, then yeah, I mean Burton's film is better, but right now I would say definitely Xavier Worthy.
Well, look, our model is funny because it's got, you know, Neighbors, Harrison, Odunze, Franklin, and then it's you know, the next three are Worthy, Burton, and Ladd McConkey, and that's why Burton being up there was like we all looked at each other like, wait, what? Jermaine Burton? Yeah. Like, you know, no, he's not getting any love. Like, what's going on? So I started to watch film. I'm like, you're right, man. You watch him, you're like, this dude, and he's competitive as all get out. Like,
oh, yeah.
Every time he catches something, he's ready to tell the other, you know, the cornerback, you know, what's up. Like, it's just very awesome to watch him play. He's an
absolute
dog.
College football in like complaining or like throwing a fit when he doesn't get the ball, like because he's wide ass open on all these plays, and you know his quarterback's not very good this past year. He's a guy that I think could end up being the steal of this draft. And like if he goes to the right spot in fantasy, I definitely think so. Because I was with you where I was like, why are people not talking about Jermaine Burton like three games after what, like charting three games worth of film on him? I was like,
right,
what am I like? I never see this guy mocked in you know the first round or the third round or like even like that kind of range. What's the deal? I reach out to a few people I trust and like, yeah, I find out why nobody's talking about
him.
So yeah, there are issues there. And look, some of that stuff, like it's just not even worth me like parsing that out because I don't know him. I've never talked to him, but just like those, the red flags are there with the player. And then we just kind of have to like, we'll see what the NFL does. Cause I mean, there were some, I don't know where you stood on Kayshon Booty last year, but there were some big Kayshon Booty bros in the streets last year for sure. And then the NFL told you like, yeah, we're out on this guy. Cause he goes on day like late on day three. And I don't think the film on Kayshon Booty was very good.
Yeah. But, like, I only got a couple of maybe one Kayshon Booty. I'm in like 20 dynasty leagues. So yeah, not exactly.
Not a good
way
percentage.
More Tank Dell and Puka Nacua. Let's just say I won last year's draft.
There you go.
Ladd McConkey. I'm smitten. Like, you know, he is this year's Puka Nacua in that his underlying metrics and film is way, 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 way better than his raw stats. The raw stats don't tell the story. And every time you just turn on the film, I heard you talk, I think it was with JJ, I was been listening to a lot of stuff, obviously, but you talked about his after the catch. He is third in the class behind Malik Nabers and another one of your favorites, Malik Washington, in missed tackles forced per reception. Ladd McConkey is not white, insert white slot receiver guy. And it's just, it maddens me when people can't get off those. But I mean, he is a real, like he's in that, you know, Jordan Addison type mold where he can, you know, if he's deployed as a slot flanker that can move around and get a move. Cause as you point out, he's not that good against press, but look, there's plenty of opportunity for him to be a speed, you know, Z almost like, I mean, he's so good. And I would just ask, is he like the most, outside the top three, obviously, is he the most like can't miss prospect in this class?
Yeah, because other than injuries and stuff like that, I have a tough time seeing like him not be a good player in the NFL. And then it's just kind of like, what is his ceiling? Because
bingo,
I compare him to Tyler Lockett.
Yeah.
You know, a downfield guy that you play as
perfect.
A slot flanker.
Yes.
A vertical slot or like a reliable flanker. That's who Ladd McConkey is. And people think of Tyler Lockett after the catch now. You know, he goes down when anybody breathes near him. But like Tyler Lockett used to be a big time kick
returner. Yep.
Yeah. So like he had that same open field juice that Ladd McConkey clearly does. You know, he broke multiple tackles, like 2+ tackles in his chances in space at a higher rate than anybody else in the draft class for me.
Yeah, like, yeah, and I think you would probably agree that Ladd McConkey's a better prospect than Tyler Lockett was. We just think that he can be the type of NFL player that Tyler Lockett became.
Right, because Tyler Lockett eventually developed into being like a high quality press coverage beater and like a tight coverage catcher.
Yes.
That's where Ladd McConkey, those two areas are the worst areas in his profile, but what if he gets better in those areas?
Right.
You know, then, and he already has a base of skills to work with. So I'm a big fan of his game as well. I gave him kind of like a late first, early second round grade. I think he's just one of my favorite players in this class. I desperately want him to go to like a high quality passing game where he can get like a lot of volume as that secondary threat. Because he'd be perfect as the running man across from a big X receiver like DK Metcalf to Tyler Lockett.
Yes, that would be a good spot. Yeah, for sure. Okay, so let's do this. I can't let you leave without talking about this group of players. And of course, I craft the question just so that it really makes you. I don't know. You got to deal with this question. Look, you got Brian Thomas, Adonai Mitchell and Keon Coleman, and Javon Baker.
Mm.
Why can't Javon Baker end up being the best player from this group?
So I don't think it's impossible that he can. I think that you certainly are looking for the other three guys to flame out, which, by the way, is possible for all three players.
Mm-hmm.
I think the most to least likely to flame out would be Keon Coleman, just because he gets deployed the wrong way and he's an outside receiver. He goes the Treylon Burks path, and I don't think he can do that. I think he would be like regardless of all the stuff with Treylon Burks, like from injuries and all that stuff, like you watch him play and it's like, he can't play outside, period. End of story. Like he needs a role change. I think Keon Coleman could have that same sort of effect. I think A.D. Mitchell is then kind of in the middle there as a guy that is volatile, but I do like his ability to beat press man. And I think he could end up being a solid X receiver. And then Brian Thomas actually, I think is the safest, but sure, also has some volatility just because I think that archetype of receiver actually is pretty safe from like a you're a useful player standpoint.
It's like Gabe Davis, DJ Chark, or what? How much of a percentage is he of DK Metcalf? That's when we're talking about
exactly
Brian Thomas.
Correct. Yeah, 100%. Right. So there's just like there's a floor for that type of player.
DJ
so
Chark,
he's the least like
whatever.
Yeah, DJ Chark, which, I mean, you hopefully don't draft DJ Chark in the mid-first round, but still, it's within that kind of like family of X receivers. So I think that he's counting on those three guys to fail, and then I think you're counting on him to sort of hit his ceiling here, which I look at Javon Baker, and I'm guessing based on you asking me this question, you're a fan of Javon Baker.
To some degree. I think he's an intriguing prospect given his past. And then, you know, like he was a high level recruit. He also had some, I don't know about what type of problems, but ultimately, you know, transferred twice immediately or whatever. Like I remember the story, you know, I don't remember, you know, all the details, but like, I mean, there's just something there. And then he goes out and dominates. I don't know. Thor. Thor Nystrom had said like he unapologetically thinks he's the best player in the draft.
He acts like it too on film, which is good. But the funny thing with him is just like once you get past the top three guys, and then there's Brian Thomas, who I think fits in the X receiver family.
Yep.
You know, then you're looking at like, again, Keon Coleman, I think, needs a position change.
Yep.
I think he needs to move inside. You know, there's Ricky Pearsall. There's Ladd McConkey, who we talked about. There's A.D. Mitchell. Okay, there's another X receiver. But then there's like Xavier Worthy. There's Troy Franklin. I think he can't really be an X. Xavier Leggett, big guy. Don't think he is really ideally deployed as like a true X receiver. So once you get out of those like top five receivers in the class, top four receivers in the class, like your next best X candidate is Javon Baker.
Right.
I think he's like a Michael Gallup type. Michael Gallup went the third round of that draft in 2018. I really liked Michael Gallup's reception perception profile wasn't elite in any ways, but it's just like, oh, this is a guy that can get open at the X and can win contested catches.
Yeah.
I think Javon Baker can get open at the X. He can get off the line of scrimmage. Not going to be an elite separator, but he can be that type of guy. And like Michael Gallup had some really good years before he tore his ACL. And I kind of think that's the destiny for a player like Javon Baker.
Yeah. I mean, if he's a Michael Gallup level player with that crazy drive, who knows what that can become without injuries. Right. You know what I mean? Yeah. That's a great call. And I do think Ad Mitchell and Keon Coleman have bust written all over them just from the data. You know, everybody loves Ad Mitchell. They're like, you know, watch the film, bro. I'm like, all right. I mean, I get it. Yeah, maybe he's good. But I mean, I think JJ gave you some data on Ad Mitchell that was like, you know, the buckets he finds himself in, it's very, very hard to find good fruit from that bucket. That's all I'm going to say. And that from anybody who looks at any sort of metrics, it's hard to buy into Adonai Mitchell at any sort of expensive cost. That's all.
And the reality with a player like him, and I said this on Twitter yesterday, that once you get past the top three, you can do this for pretty much anyone, I think, except Brian Thomas, but like who again, I do think has just useful NFL in his future. But like,
yes,
there's pretty much something in all these other players' profiles from a reception perception standpoint that you could say like, this is why he fails, or this is why he succeeds. You know, if you're an A.D. Mitchell bro, you look at his profile and you say, look at that, over 80th percentile against man and press coverage, and he's going to be an X receiver. Boom. Of course he's going to hit. He can separate against man press coverage. If you're an A.D. Mitchell denier, you're going to look at that and be like, the league is running more zone coverage than ever.
True.
And by the way, I do think that's – it's true. I think it's a little overstated. If you're going to be an outside receiver, you're still going to need face man coverage.
Even
in
zone, you're almost sometimes running against pseudo man.
Yeah, like these pattern match zone coverage schemes. I don't know what some people end up charting them as, but they often end up becoming man coverage situations, especially for outside receivers. But it's like different for a slot, so it's just not as easy and clean as that statement makes it sound.
Correct.
But still, there is more zone coverage across the league, and A.D. Mitchell's has a 30 first percentile success rate versus zone coverage. So if we're doing, and I would love to do this, you and I do this podcast in 3-5 years from now, and you say, hey, remember AD Mitchell and he never works out? It's like, yeah, because he probably didn't get his ass in gear against zone coverage. Like, I actually think the way he runs routes is it's really suited to being a man coverage beater, because he kind of has this like DeAndre Hopkins lull you to sleep type of route running that I think gets confused for laziness or whatever. But that also at times I'm like, hey man, we got to hit, that's cool when we're one-on-one ISO situations, but like this is zone coverage situation. And like, I need you to just get to your landmark,
right?
I need you to get to your landmark and get open on this dig route, or get to your landmark and sit down in the open window against zone coverage. And he doesn't do that.
Right.
So like, there is definitely just overall, you want to just say he's a boom bust prospect.
He's scary.
You could, that's easier to say than whatever I just said.
Right.
He's a boom bust prospect.
Yes. No, but that's I'm glad that you said that. That's why the context matters and understanding why, you know, I hear he's lazy. I don't really know. That doesn't sound like a good trait. I mean, I don't know if he's lazy, you know, I hear it. I don't know if he is. I do know.
Yeah.
He had awful yards per route run metrics versus zone and man. You know, I mean, he was just really, really bad against it all in terms of how successful he was in those regards. Now, I've heard that the Texas offense was a mess and da da da. Yeah, I've heard a lot of things. Again, at the end of the day, you know, I was going to ask, you know, anybody who's an AD defender is like, yeah, the offense was a mess and da da da. Okay, tell me the guy who was drafted in the first round who had awful yards per route run in both zone and man that played for a shitty college team that was awesome. Just go ahead and tell me who that was, and then, you know, then I'll know what you're talking about. Just tell me the story. There's never been that guy. I don't know who that is. Like, these guys always seem to fail. I'm not saying he will. I'm just saying if you're making a bet, the odds are against you with AD Mitchell. And I, you know, I'm tantalized by the athleticism and the sort of the pedigree and the highlight films and all the rest of it. But I've learned my lesson with a guy like, you know, N'Keal Harry with highlight films. I'm not saying he's N'Keal Harry, but all right, sure. Last one, because this is the red meat for you, because I already know what you're going to say. So it's just an opportunity for me to tee you up. So there are a lot of slot guys in this class, right? Slot guys galore. Roman Wilson, Malik Washington, Jacob Cowing, Malachi Corley, Luke McCaffrey, Jalen McMillan, Ricky Pearsall, Anaya Smith. Now, some of these guys might play different roles. You know, Anaya might play some more speed stretch, and, you know, Pearsall can probably play a little bit more than just slot. I'm not saying these are slot-only guys, but they did play a lot of slot. Probably almost all of them, I think, were over 50% slot guys. I think I did that research right. Pretty close to it, if not all of them, were well above 50% slot guys at the college level. Which of these guys do you think can come into the NFL and command targets? Because that's all we give a shit about in Dynasty and Fantasy. We need targets. So of that group, who's getting targets at the NFL level immediately?
I think it's Ricky Pearsall.
Yeah, I know you do.
Although I'm tempted to say Malik Washington, just because like, I think that's the type of guy, like, people think Wandale Robinson is really good because he like commands targets, quote unquote. I don't know where you stand on Wandale Robinson, but people think he's really good. Yeah, he's fine. He's a fine little player, but like, he commands targets because he's like kind of that gimmicky, you know, the boys at Underdog, Josh Norris and Hayden Winks called a PPR scam. Like, he's the PPR scam of PPR scam receivers.
Yes.
He's like the peak of that archetype. But I sell it to say that like, Malik Washington is a better version of that type of player. So like, he could come in and be like a high volume player as well. But really, yeah, my answer here is Ricky Pearsall, who I think is a awesome prospect. I mean, he is a guy that wins against man coverage, wins against zone coverage. He's like average against press coverage. But that's enough, I think, to be a guy that plays as a flanker slot kind of hybrid. I've been saying that he could be a guy that starts out as a quarterback's best friend, right? Like, is just kind of there to be the volume sponge underneath and in the intermediate areas. But I think he could grow into being like a Deontay Johnson type of outside receiver too, where, yeah, he's smaller, whatever, but he you think he's a slot, but he's actually running big boy routes on the outside. He could be that guy that just commands that level of targets because he's that type of separator.
Well, I know you love Ricky Pearsall, so I let you get your guy, you know, his love on the show. I don't know, man. Ricky Pearsall, I saw the, what was it, like during the combine or some shit like that, or somewhere around there, they were showing video of him like with all the dudes at the wide receivers, like out at a pickup game or something, he was like throwing down windmill reverse dunks and shit. Like, dude's got athleticism.
Crazy athletic. Yeah, he's that's the thing about him, is he is crazy athletic. And that's what I think that does show up on tape, like in terms of his downfield ability to win. And like, it wasn't always maximized because not a great quarterback situation there, especially last year. So yeah, I think that he's a guy that the athleticism shows up. He's competitive, and he's out there working out with like the Miami guys right now. Tyreek Hill, he's out there working out with him. So I'm excited, man. I think he's a guy that could end up being an early producer and then just kind of like grows and builds his role from there.
Yeah. And you mentioned Malik Washington. I mentioned he's second. Him, Ladd, and Malik Nabers are right up there in terms of missed tackles force. This guy's a real player. And some of these guys are going to get saved or killed with draft capital, right? I mean, don't you think that basically spells some of their futures?
Yeah, man. It just is the reality of it, right? Some of these guys are going to go to a spot where it's just like, from a role perspective, it's not going to work out. I mean, like, take Jaxon Smith-Njigba for instance. I like Jaxon Smith-Njigba as a prospect a lot. I don't have him in my first tier of prospects on my stacked board, whereas all the top three guys this year are tier one prospects. But he's a good player, and I think the NFL film is fine. Like, it's fine.
Yeah.
Okay. Even in the early part of the year, like, I haven't done the back half games yet, but even in the early part, when it's like he's kind of in this bullshitty little low average depth of target type role.
Yes.
But like, you see him run routes, and like the success rates first man and zone are fine. I bet by the end of the year, they're probably going to be better, because he looked, when I was watching games, like, you see him run better routes in isolation, and he's more comfortable because he missed time during training camp. And like, yo, you're a rookie receiver who misses time during training camp, unless you're Odell Beckham, like, you're gonna fall behind, because it's just so easy to fall behind so fast.
And especially if DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett exist.
Well, and that's kind of what I was going to say here, is that, like, the film is fine. There's a reason he started a little bit slow. But the reality of it is, man, like, he gets drafted by the Seattle Seahawks. He's fucked, okay? Yeah. Like, I'm glad you said that I could work blue on this show, because, like, you're fucked, man. Like, those are two veteran level receivers that you are just not gonna replace in year one, okay? Like, period. And now they're both back. Like, DK's on a long-term contract, and every dynasty bro in the offseason was like, yeah, well, look at Tyler Lockett's contract, they could get out in this. Well, guess what they didn't do?
They didn't
get rid of him.
Yeah,
because he's good.
Yeah, he's good.
Is he as good as he used to be? No, but he's still a good, useful player. And NFL teams are not just like trying to thin out their receiving depth chart,
right?
Because to get more targets for your fantasy team. Like, it just doesn't work out.
That's not how it works.
It's not how it works. And, like, I don't think any of this has to do with Jaxon Smith-Njigba being bad. But, like, that's going to – like, say a receiver goes to Chicago at 9. Say it's Roma Dunze, who I love and I think is ready to rock from day one
as a
pro contributor. He's going to be behind DJ Moore and Keenan Allen right away.
Yep.
And I mean, I talked to Daniel Jeremiah about this on my show, and he's like, I think Roma Dunze would be the best red zone threat on that team right away. And I'm
sure,
like, yeah, that's true. But he could still be third on the team in targets in year one. And we could all be doing this thing where, oh, well, you know, Keenan Allen's a free agent after the year and like 32 years old,
whatever.
And then they just re-sign him because why do you want to take weapons away from Caleb Williams?
Yes.
You just drafted. Like, so that scenario exists for any of these players.
Yes.
Shoot. The Bears could trade up to 5 or 4 or something like that, because they're just like in fuck it mode.
Yes.
And they get Marvin Harrison Jr.
Right.
And then Marvin Harrison, who is an elite prospect, still as a rookie might not out target DJ Moore and Keenan Allen.
Yep, he's like, got some squeeze.
It just is what it is. And like, that's the reality of playing wide receiver. Like, there's not enough footballs to go around for all these players. And then, you know what, by the end of the season, if it's Roma Dunze, like, the Matt Harmon haters will be victory lapping Roma Dunze, like, not having a good rookie season. It's just like, hey, what are you going to do, man? Like, he's surrounded by two good pro players.
You'll have that take, though, when it comes out. You'll be like, hey, you know, we understand that. Look, and of course, don't ever listen to the haters.
The smart people understand.
Don't ever listen to the haters. The haters do it on purpose. They just want to come in there and tear you down. I, you know, when I first started to become popular in the space and everything, I was like, people would say bad things, and I'd be like, I feel like I had to respond on Twitter or
who cares?
No. Now I'm like, I literally do not give a shit. I like, it's beautiful. I'm like, I actually appreciate it. I'm like, oh, look, there's someone who disagrees. Good for them or whatever. You know, if someone else wants to talk to them, they can. I don't find any value there, but I think that's great. You know, good for you. You hate my little take on this or that. It's like, I don't really like all my takes either. So it's not like I'm like proud of everyone. And, you know, we have a saying on this pod and, you know, it's be ready to be wrong. And of course, like I always say our rankings, your rankings, everybody's rankings, draft capital, everything, every single order that we put the players in will be wrong. Somehow or not, like Justin Jefferson got picked behind Jalen Reagor in real fucking football, dude. And CeeDee Lamb went behind Jerry Jeudy and Henry Ruggs in that same class. Of course it would go Justin Jefferson 1 and CeeDee Lamb 2 and so forth. And okay, great. Nobody got that right. Next, what's the problem? Like, I'm ready to change my opinion based off what I see happen going forward and landing spot, draft capital, situation, target share, pace of the offense, coaching staff. And one of the other things that could change for JSN is that coaching staff. Speak just a moment. I think that's at least a positive indicator, don't you?
I think that offense, I don't know how it's going to work out. Like, part of me thinks that the Seahawks will end up being kind of like the football hipsters team of 2024.
Totally.
Just because, like, Ryan Grubb and that, like, taking not fully what they did at Washington, but a lot of that, like, downfield concepts and, like, making use of the slot receiver from a downfield standpoint. Because that was the thing that was kind of annoying with Jaxon Smith-Njigba. It's like, he can do more than just run these, like, layup routes from the slot. Like,
exactly.
Let's give him some – and, you know, there was that clip that came out of Super Bowl Media Week. And, look, like, I do a lot of Super Bowl media interviews. So, like, I understand these guys are not always just, like, firing off and, like, ready to answer questions. Sometimes they give you an answer like, yeah, I mean, I don't know, like, and, you know, nothing. And then people take it out of context and all that. But I certainly saw him answer that question about Shane Waldron as the Bears offensive coordinator. And he said, you know, good luck or whatever. And then he said a lot of good things about Shane Waldron. I'm sure he doesn't have, but I bet there's something in the back of his mind
there.
Because I watch it on film and I see, like, yeah, you know, he can do a little more than what he's doing here on this offense. So I am definitely excited to see him with this in this attack for sure.
Fantastic. All right, man. I know you got to get out of here, so I'll let you go. I could do this all day. I'd love to talk to you first of all, like, you know, I'd love to have you back because, you know, Ayuk, great job there. You know, you've done a great job. You know, we love Ayuk, and we've profited on Ayuk a little bit in Dynasty because of your analysis. So, you know, great job. I'll just say you're awesome.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. I did feel like there was a moment with Brandon Ayuk where, like, it was the first year we launched Reception Perception in the website, and he was in the doghouse. And I was like, oh, man, are we going to have to close up shop? Is this going to end my career? But Ayuk is awesome. But listen, I would love to come back and do this. Would love to do this, like, you know, maybe sometime closer to training camp when we've got maybe some whispers about, like, where these guys might be playing from a deployment perspective.
Love it. Love it. Yeah, dude, love to have you back. The people love you. Thanks for being on the show. Absolutely fantastic show. So thank you so much, Mr. Matt Harmon. Go follow him. Go get Reception Perception. It's worth every bit of your time, attention, and as much money as you can possibly throw at Mr. Matt Harmon. Go give it, because he's worked his ass off and it's an unbelievable product. Thank you, Matt Harmon. On behalf of everybody here at the Undroppables, on behalf of everybody here at the Undrafted, on behalf of the greatest podcast producer to ever walk the land, Mr. Michael P. Duncan, you have been joined by the great Matt Harmon. I am Jax Falcone, and we are out.